number 81, Marianne Hossa.
So welcome to a special interview edition of 32 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC and the new AT4X, Merrick Friedman Delich. You know, my first experience with a Slovak hockey player, I mean, and maybe it's the same for you, Elliot, since we're the same vintage, was the 1976 Canada Cup. And the one player that I really fell in love with and was intrigued by, because I loved goaltenders and there were some colorful ones in the 70s, I was intrigued by Vladimir Zorilla, who was outstanding in that Canada Cup. Now, the biography on Zorilla was, by trade, he was a refrigerator repairman. That's a true story. Now, in addition to being, you know, Dominik Hasek's inspiration, this guy had a 9-to-5 as a refrigerator repairman. He also spent almost 20 years as a netminder for the Czechoslovakian national team. He was awesome in that tournament. And then the page flipped from decade to decade. And in the 80s, I fell in love with Peter Stastny. I love the Quebec Nordiques. I love Stastny. Great Slovak hockey player. Spot quiz. You can use this one at parties, everybody. In the 1980s, the high-scoring 80s, Wayne Gretzky was the leading scorer. Who was number two? It was Peter Stastny. And those were my two main favorite Slovak hockey players. I think you have one who's rather tall and recently wrapped it up.
Yeah, Chara, as you know, he was always my favorite. I love dealing with Chara. But I love Stastny too, and I do remember Zorilla. I mean, there isn't a Canadian hockey fan, or probably a hockey fan anywhere who's our age, who hasn't seen the goal that Daryl Sittler scored to end the 1976 Canada Cup. And Zorilla was absolutely brilliant that series.
That one particular play, he came out to almost the blue line, as I remember, to challenge Sittler.
Yes.
Great moment. Great moments in goaltending. Well, you know, and this brings us to, you know, someone that I've, you know, embarrassingly gushed about for years and was a real thrill to sit down and talk to him, and that's Marianne Hossa. He has a new book out called Marianne Hossa, My Journey from Trenchant to the Hall of Fame, alongside Scott Powers. I'm really happy he made it to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I'm really happy that his number is retired by the Chicago Blackhawks. And to me, the one thing that I've always said about Hossa, there's an old saying in hockey, you can't give a great player a bad pass. To me, no one proved that more than Marianne Hossa, Friedge.
The other thing I think about him is that Hossa was, in a lot of ways, I think, the perfect complementary player. He could play with just about anybody, and it kind of goes to what you said there. You could put him on any team with any great player, and he could play alongside him. And as we've learned, not everybody can do that. No. It's a harder skill than you think, and Hossa was phenomenal at it.
The one thing about Hossa, too, is he's, how should I say this? He's a hockey player's hockey player. Like, he's the guy the players look at, and like the tiny little things that hockey players marvel at, Marianne Hossa makes them look easy. Like, if you go around and talk to players that played either with him or against him, and you bring up his name, they'll just start gushing about how awesome he is and how envious they are about this particular skill or that particular skill. Anyhow, here's Marianne Hossa on 32 Thoughts, the podcast, a special interview. It was our pleasure to sit down with the Hall of Famer. We hope you enjoy listening as much as we enjoy talking to the Hall of Famer. Listen to 32 Thoughts, the podcast, ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Left wing feed and Isimov. His pass across ice makes its way through to Hossa for the shot. He scores! There it is, number 500 for Marianne Hossa. And his teammates are well aware of it as he gets the hugs over by the Chicago bench. 44th player in NHL history with 500 goals.
Just an outstanding career for Marianne Hossa. One of the best two-way players in the game.
Howland getting back. Christine Tambelus, there's Hossa with a stop shot. He's scored! The thousand point for Marianne Hossa, and he's put his team in front. Marianne Hossa, after a Christine terrific forecheck, has given the Blackhawks the lead.
And there's 1,000 career points.
Only 79 other guys in the history of the league has ever reached that milestone. He does it in his 1,100th career game, 1,000 points in his storied career. Four-time Stanley Cup finalist, four-time Slovakian Olympian.
Elliot, there's so much we can say about Marian Hossa that we would probably spend the majority of this interview just setting it up. Here are the thumbtacks. He is a Hockey Hall of Famer. He is one of the best wingers of his generation. He is a Stanley Cup champion. And now we can also say, Elliot, he is an author, the author of My Journey from Trenton to the Hall of Fame. Please welcome Marian Hossa. Marian, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
Nice to see you guys. I'm doing really well.
How is life for Marian Hossa right now? Give us a snapshot. Like, what is your day-to-day like? How do you fill your time? What are you interested in right now?
It's slower than it used to be when I was playing, but also more busier in the different areas. More business-oriented. But I still keep an eye on how the Blackhawks are playing. You know, still got the two of my really good friends playing, and definitely I'm in contact with the Blackhawks organization. You know, I just love hockey. I'm not playing anymore, but I still like keep in the loop, you know, keep checking the scores and see how my favorite players are doing.
So who are your favorite players? Who do you watch?
Well, Connor McDavid, you know, like I love watching that guy. Like there is, you know, he's like from different planet. McKinnon. Those guys, you know, they're an excited player to watch. But there is like so many great young players. But also like, you know, I talked to Kaner the other day, you know, love to watch him. Johnny Taves, you know, having a good start in the season. So obviously guys I used to play with, but also some young, exciting superstars. It's always when they score, I click, you know, I want to see the goal. I knew there is something always happening.
Now, you were a really good defensive player, Marian. If you were lined up against Connor McDavid, what would you do?
In one chapter, I was like writing a little bit about him. I think he was 19 years old when he jumped in the league. Well, obviously, he jumped in as 18, right? We played in Edmonton, and I think that was in their zone. I was handling the puck. All of a sudden, he poked it, and he was gone. And thanks God, the puck bounced over his stick, so I got it back. And I just passed it and went to change. And I started scratching my head on the bench. I was like, I think this is the first time I would never had a chance to catch this guy. Like, I usually disrupt guys, you know, like back checking, but this guy would be gone. I have no chance. And I sit on a bench for a half a second. I was thinking, I never feel this way, you know?
I think that's an outstanding story too, because you played in an era where there were some great skaters as well and some countrymen as well. And listen, Marian Gaborik's one of my favorite hockey players of all time. And boy, could he ever fly. Outside of Connor McDavid, who did you find that the toughest to check was? Like as Elliot mentions, you're a great 200-foot player. I've always maintained, and I think Elliot shares the same sentiment. Like there should have been at least a couple of Selke trophies behind you on that trophy shelf by the time your career was done. But who else did you find really challenging who had just amazing foot speed?
Pavel Datsyuk, you know, I just felt like he had like tricks in his sleeves. And I mentioned one chapter in my book about him because I think he was really, really special player. And playing with him was so much easier. You know, I was mentioning in the book also, I was lucky to play different teams with so many special players, like in Pittsburgh with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. You know, then I went to Detroit. You know, there was Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and obviously another Hall of Famers, Nick Lindstrom, Chris Chelios. And in Chicago, you got Johnny Taves and Patrick Kane. So obviously, I was really lucky to be in a great, great teams to play with the special players and, you know, help me to become a really better player.
Okay, so there's a few stories that you talk about here in the book that really, I always look for the stories I didn't know about you, okay? And so there were a couple I wanted you to talk about. Number one, Mario Lemieux called you and told you, we want you back in Pittsburgh, and you turned him down. How hard was it to say no to Mario Lemieux?
One of the toughest phone calls I ever had. His jersey hanging right here because he was my favorite player with Wayne Gretzky. You know, there's two jerseys when I was growing up. You know, I said, wow, these guys are unreal. when I knew when I finished my career, I want to personalize the jersey, sign it for me. And I was really scared to ask Mario because you know, I was rejecting, you know, their offer. And but he was so nice to obviously to sign it for me, and he had no problem with that. And come back to the phone call, that was summer 2008. And when he called me, I was driving in a highway, and I saw some U.S. number. So I pick it up, and I'm driving on a hands-free, and all of a sudden, it's like, Marion, it's Mario Lemieux calling you. And I was like my idol is calling me. It's like, no way. So I pull over, like, first gas station I could, you know, when I step on the brakes, I was, like, breathing heavier. And, you know, obviously, he told me, you know, they really want me. We were negotiating already with my agent, and my agent was telling me, like, how the things are. And obviously, I wasn't sure. And I had, like, Detroit also really interested, but only 1 year. And I felt scared to tell at the time, but I didn't know at the time, you know, I'm going to sign with Detroit. I told Mario, I was like, we're really working on it. You know, I really appreciate your offer, and I will get back to you with my agent. So there was a quick phone call. I never forget a phone call like that, because Mario Lemieux only called you one.
The other one I really remember, and I loved, Marion, was, because I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes here. So you win the first Stanley Cup in 2010, and you're going home after that summer, and you're going to get married, and you forgot the dress at your apartment in Chicago. And here's my question. Do you think they shut the door on the plane if you lose that series to Philadelphia? Do you think you only held the door open because you won?
That's a great question. You know, we were renting the first year apartment, and we were moving. I already bought one, like not far away. So we were like moving. You know, I was still like a little hangover from the celebration and things going on, and I'm moving slowly. My, you know, we're getting dressed for my wife. So finally, the dress is hanging there. All the bags are packed. So we brought all the bags to the car downstairs, and things just hung in the door, and we just jump on the car and drive to the heavy traffic in Chicago. Finally, we got to the airport. It's like, yes, finally we're in the airport. Good timing. And he's like, where's the dress? He's like, oh, no. Oh, I'm hanging there. Oh, like, we cannot ship it, right, because it's going to get all wrinkled and stuff. So we're calling our, like, friend, and she's right there. So they open the door, but I said, like, there is no chance we're going to make it, right? They told us, like, you guys have, like, 45 minutes. Like, with this traffic, 45 minutes, there's no chance, like, she's going to make it. And they kept the door, you know, open for maybe a few minutes longer for us. And they won the Stanley Cup. They start celebrating for us with a dress. The whole plane on the beginning, you know, I was like, oh, they're going to get mad. You know, be careful. And they were, like, clapping hands. You know, obviously, they knew we just won. So they were super nice. And answer your question, I think you are right. You know, I think they would close the door.
I'm always curious about players who influenced you when you were young. Like, I remember my father, okay, before the 1976 Canada Cup tournament. I still remember, my dad passed away a few years ago, but I can always remember him telling me about Peter Stastny. Oh, you wait till you see Peter Stastny. You wait till you see the Stastny. This guy is so, and he was, I mean, Peter Stastny is like one of the best players ever. But there was one other Slovak player on the Czechoslovakian team, the netminder, Vladimir Zorilla, who I just absolutely adored. So Zorilla and Rogi Vashon were the two goaltenders in the final. So those were the two, my first experiences with Slovak hockey players. Two of the best, Peter Stastny, Vladimir Zorilla. Growing up, who are your favorite players? Who are your favorite Slovak hockey players?
Those are two big names. You see, obviously, the Stastny brothers were a huge effect to play National Hockey League. They put a big name for Slovakia, period. You know, Peter have unbelievable career. I just met him last year at the airport. He was flying to St. Louis. I was flying to Chicago, and we met, you know, in the lounge, and we started talking. So that was nice to see him. Those are big brothers' names, and they put a big stamp for Slovakia and other players coming to National Hockey League. But obviously, they're older generation. When I was growing up, I remember Peter Bondra from Slovakian players, you know, one of those guys I really, like, love to watch his speed, you know, goal scoring goals for Washington. And also, like, Ziggy Palfi was fun to watch, you know. He was, like, effortless little player, but just so smooth and really, really just fun to watch.
Could you ever get a mullet like Ziggy Palfi had? Like, did you ever try anything like that?
When I was 11 years old.
You did, eh?
Yeah, I had one. Yeah, I got my first hockey card, actually. It's kind of like a red mullet, you know, like short and round, long in the end. That was the haircut then.
Did you have that in Portland as well when you played in the Western League? Did you have the mullet back then?
No, not anymore. I think that was the only time.
You know, you were, you know, in a lot of ways, you were a real, like, you know, like Zdeno Chara ended up going to Prince George and you went to Portland. That was kind of like a big moment for hockey in Canada and the Canadian Hockey League. Probably a big moment for you. Why did you make that decision to go play junior hockey in Canada?
I was lucky. I got the opportunity as a 17-year-old before my draft year play for the men's first time in my home team in Trenčín. Mm-hmm. So they gave me a chance and I scored, I think, over 30 goals that season. So for a 17-year-old was really good. And I got drafted by Ottawa because of that season. And I started feeling really confident. I had like a good, pretty decent world junior. Mm-hmm. Marshall Johnson, you know, really watched me, he scouted me, and he drafted me. But then I had really good training camp as an 18-year-old. I think I won by points in the training camp. You know, I beat Alexey Yashin, you know, and Alexander Bake. I had more points than those guys. But then when the season started, they gave me a chance, 7 games. But yep. I started struggling, you know. I started learning, okay, this is not that easy that I thought. You know, this league is really hard. And my confidence went down, and they decided to send me to Portland Winterhawks. So first, I wasn't happy by the decision, but right now, I was writing in a book. That was the best decision they did for me because I gained confidence. I started learning how to adapt in North American style, live with a North American family, you know, get better in English in every different aspect. My roommate was Brandon Morrow, captain for Dallas Stars. So we spent a year there together, and that was an amazing journey.
When was the moment, Marian, where you first said, I'm going to be fine here? I'm going to adapt and this is not going to be a problem for me to get there eventually.
I think, in the finals, my last game, there was third period, 5 minutes left. We won the Memorial Cup, but I got hurt like 5 minutes before the game. So final game of the season, you know, like, and I tore my ACL, basically really big operation was coming up in Ottawa. And they told me I need to stay in Ottawa and rehab the whole summer. So no going home. In the old rules, you remember clutching, grabbing, hooking, slashing. So I was skinny kid, like really talented, but skinny kid. And that summer, I gained weight. I was really just, you know, my mom was there with me in the summer. She dropped me in a Scotiabank Center, or I think back then was named in Ottawa, in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I told her, like, come back in 4 or 5 hours, you know, to pick me up. So every day I was doing like the rehab, working out upper body, and I just get bigger, stronger. And when the season came next day, like that year after Portland, I was way stronger. I gained muscle. Like, I feel like nobody could touch me on the ice. Like, my legs were so super strong. And I think at that point, I started feeling like I'm staying in this league. I don't want to move away anymore in the minors or anywhere else. I want to stay here.
That Ottawa team had some guys who were really committed to physical fitness, like Alfredson was, and obviously Chara was. Were you on Chara's level? Could you bike with Chara for like 5 hours or anything like that?
That guy is like madman. I remember him in my hometown when he was training. Me and Gabby went a couple times with him to his training. After the first round of the training, we said, like, fuck it, you know. This is crazy. Like, you know, like, he's like, guys, you know, like, you don't have to finish all everything, but do this, right? And I'll finish it everything, but you just do this and just watch me to do it. And after, like, be ready for the next round. It's like, Z, this last time you see he's practicing with you, like, this hand, you know, like, this is my making hands, you know, like, I cannot, like, go up and down the rope, like, 5 times like you and without the legs. I was like, no way. Yeah, that guy is working like a madman.
You know, that was an interesting team as well. I mean, to Elliott's point, like a lot of guys that were really dedicated to physical fitness and like Hall of Famers on that team. You're in the Hall of Fame. Daniel Alfredson is going to the Hall of Fame. Zdeno Chara will be in the Hall of Fame one day. Like that Ottawa Senators team, we may not have realized it at the time, even though it was a great team, but there were legitimate top of class, like all time players on that team. Did you feel that way when you're playing with the Senators? Like, hey, I'm looking around the room here and that guy's going to the Hall of Fame and that guy's going to the Hall of Fame and I'm going to the Hall of Fame.
Not a chance. I was just, doing baby steps. I try to be the best I can be so they cannot send me down to the minors or, you know, somewhere else. After I make the lineup, my goal was like help the team to score goals. After when I start scoring goals, I was putting like a little higher standards every year to try to raise my game. And that was my goal. I wasn't like total, like at all, like thinking like, one time in a Hall of Fame or my jersey hanging one time somewhere. There was like no way that was in my head at all. You know, my goal was to win hockey game, help the team to win hockey games and try to, be better hockey player each year. That was my goal. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned that team in Ottawa, we had like really good teams. I was there like 7 years and unbelievable teams. We were winning lots of games in the regular seasons, but after when the playoffs came, we couldn't beat Maple Leafs, It seems like Maple Leafs now, they're an unbelievable team and they cannot pass the first round. I felt like, some similarities when I was in Ottawa.
You know, I remember Alfredson said like the one time that Ty Domi's head wasn't hard, he got cut and you guys lost a playoff series to them. But the one I remember, Marion, the closest you guys came, I mean, you were right there in 03. You were right there in 03. And I just wonder if you ever, like, what it was like just in the room after Game 7 against New Jersey, and if after it was all over, you guys all said we would have won the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, I remember it right. 2003, we were down 3-1 against New Jersey. They had like really strong defensive team. Obviously, Scott Stevens, on a blue line, Martin Brodeur in a net, like he was like, stood in his head. And that was like really difficult to score goals against them. But we find a way, win two games. All of a sudden, there was 3-3, and the seventh game was at home. And I think we got like unlucky goal at the end by their
Jeff Friesen.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We couldn't recover from that. But on the other hand, there was Anaheim Mighty Ducks, right, beating somebody, and they were waiting in the finals. And I just felt like, everybody else, I felt like we had the better team. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
But I just felt like we were, like, stronger team on the lineup.
Anaheim knocked off Detroit. I will never forget that. What a performance that was by the Ducks.
Jaguar.
Jaguar was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things... Okay, I'm gonna get on something here. So one of the things, whenever I end up talking about you, Marion, I always say the same thing. I've never seen anyone take a pass better than Marion Hossa. Mm-hmm. It seemed like you would never break stride, you would never bobble it. Guys could throw it in your skates, no problem. Guys could throw passes behind you, no problem. Where does that come from? Because Marion, I've never seen anyone take passes better than you.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. When I was younger, I was playing lots of soccer, outside of my apartment. We either play hockey or soccer. When I was younger, I play lots of soccer also for other teams. Mm-hmm. My feet weren't as good to be a good soccer player than my hands were with a puck and a stick. So I think I picked the right sport. I think that definitely helped to play lots of soccer games. And I just felt like, I told my defenseman sometimes, just put it on my feet, or put it off the board and I'm going to pick it up some way. And obviously sometimes I got lucky, but, I just felt like my coordination, my feet with my head were working together, so I just felt pretty confident when the puck was coming to my feet, I could pick it up.
So you would tell defenseman, don't worry, just throw it towards me. It doesn't matter if it's in my feet. I got it.
The gap is so close. So sometimes hit. Put you like as a right wing on my back end. I usually was getting passed on my back end. Either I told them like put it behind my back of the board, I can overskate it, or just put it on my feet if the gap is too small and I can pick it up. But sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But they knew that.
So okay, now we've got to ask you as a follow up to Jeff's question: who was the worst passer you ever made look good? Like, who, which player under, even if they had time, couldn't make a good pass?
John Scott was pretty close to be bad pass.
You know, that's one of the things in the book that really stood out to me, Marion, was you were always very calm guy, like really good interview, but you're always very honest in your own way. And in the book, you're very honest in talking about John Muckler and Bob Hartley and Mike Babcock and some of the things that you saw and happened to you. Was there anything that you were nervous about to write that you said, you know what, I'm not sure I want to do this, but I'm going to do it?
Well, not really, because I don't think I put anybody down. I said about Mike Babcock, he was the best coach to prepare mm-hmm. the players for the game. And I just felt he was pretty hard on a certain player type of players, and, mm-hmm. That was his style, which is fine. Some players could burn after a season or two underneath him. I just felt like, that was all true, and there is nothing wrong, he was an unbelievable coach. That doesn't make him a bad coach when I say this, but his preparation was unreal. And obviously Bob Hartley was a tough coach too, but he was sarcastic, but also funny, so mm-hmm. you had a good laugh too with Bob. He could be honest, and we had a great time. He loved me because he could trust me. But for some young players, it could be really hard.
That story you told about him saying, do you think that was your best effort? I used to have a teacher that would do that to me. Like, they would say, because you knew if you said, yes, that's my best effort, he would say, that's not good enough. And if you said no, they would say, well, why aren't you giving your best effort? So when you wrote about that story in the book, I had flashbacks to like high school. Like, I totally understood where you were coming from with that story.
Yeah. He was pretty special when he stopped the video. It was, you cannot win basically, right? but he put it in like funny way lots of times. So when that wasn't about you, you could have a good laugh about it, right?
I want to ask you about Slovak hockey right now. Hockey in Slovakia. It seems as if we're going into another golden age. I mean, years previous, we mentioned Marian Gaborik a second ago. I always want to make sure that Pavel Dimitra's name always gets recognized and mentioned. But, we're heading into an era now, and you just look back at the last draft. Slavkovsky, Nemec, Meshar, and those are three in the first round. And it's we all know what happened last year at the Olympics. Do you have a thought on where hockey in your home country is at right now? Because it looks like it's starting to enter another golden age here.
So it's been really quiet lots of years. There was here and there, there was like some draft pick.
Yeah.
But this year, there was like big, big splash. I think the biggest in the history in the Slovak hockey. I'm talking about the draft, obviously.
Yeah.
And Slavkovsky, going number one, and Nemec number two. They basically broke the record by Marian Gaborik in our country, and that's a huge deal. So mm-hmm. I don't think ever before there was so much attention in our country about the draft that this year it was. And there is a really close look when I read the media in Slovakia about Slavkovsky, how he's doing. It's like never been about the one player like it is now. So definitely it was great story to put Slovakia again on a hockey map, after a long time. Having three first rounders for such a small country, it's great. Now it's up to the guys how they're gonna develop, how they're gonna take another charge. But definitely it's a great start after a long time.
You mentioned you love hockey. Is the next phase of your life going to continue in hockey? Like, will we ever see you in management more? Will we ever see you coaching? Where do you see this going for you?
I believe if I would stay in Chicago and live there, I would be closer with the Blackhawks. I could see myself doing something, full time. But because I'm over here, it's difficult. I'm, talking with the Blackhawks about certain position too, because I like to be connected with the team. I had a success. I was the longest there with my career. And also my daughter was born in the city. So we definitely is like our second home, and we love Chicago. So definitely like to continue to do something with the Blackhawks. Maybe it's going to be just a small part for now, and which is fine. But I could see myself do something with the hockey, but nothing major right now because I live in Slovakia.
What about like Slovak national team or anything like that? Would you coach or be the GM for something like that?
Yeah, so Miro Chatan, a longer time ago when I finished my career, he, you know, we had a meeting, we had a coffee, we talked about it, like he would love me to do something to be involved. But I told him, like, after hockey, I want to take a time off, you know, take a break, take a char. I mean, my other daughter was born just a couple of months ago, so busy house right now. And I have...
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And I have my company, you know, with 250 employees, so we are busy here with a totally different business than hockey.
What are you doing?
We have a company I invested a longer time ago, and I am like the CEO of the company. We're distributing food. It's a food business, basically. We got like 250 employees, around 350 stock items in the stores, and like 50 distribution vehicles, warehouses. And so it's a whole logistics, you know, so it's totally something different. But it's cool to learn something new and get more involved to the business side of the stuff.
That's awesome.
Great hands, great feet, great brain. Marian, congratulations on the book. It's a wonderful read. Best of luck with the book and best of luck with whatever is next for Marian Hossa. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks guys for having me. Appreciate it. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thank you very much, Marian.
Yeah, thank you. Good to see you guys. Ciao.
Incredible hockey player with an incredible story. Thank you to Marian Hossa for stopping by the podcast. Again, the book called Hossa, My Journey from Trenchen to the Hall of Fame. And by the way, don't forget a new podcast coming out Friday morning. So that is the 30th. We'll record Thursday evening for a Friday morning drop back to a, I guess, quasi-regular schedule here around the shop. Taking us out is our house band from last season. Jane's Party dropped a new album this past year, and it's great. From that record, here's Jane's Party with Live Again on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Enjoy.
Been a year since the misery, since I had it on top. I felt the weight of the history. Can't find a way to make you stop.